Okay, so a few loose ends from last time. So first of all, so we're talking about what Libun is last time. And there's really two types of Libun. There's Libun Chamor, which is it's basically bringing a metal up to the temperature of 900 degrees, at least according to the opinion of the OU. And
this is from last time?
Yeah, this is from last time. And then there's Libun Kal, which is really a different opinion of what Libun is. And it, the other, it's the Yerushalmi says that sparks are flying off it says sparks are flying. The simple understanding of that seems to mean that the metal is heated up to such an extent that sparks are flying from the metal. The Rabbeinu Avigdor HaKohen, he says that sparks are flying off a piece of straw that you touch to the metal. So that's a lower temperature. That would be about 550 or something like that. That we discussed that last time. And then we saw that the OU says there's this 160 degree Fahrenheit temperature. So we were kind of figuring out where does that come from, right? That seems to be like a third level down. And I'm going to explain that in one second, but just a very interesting biographical note. Last time I said that Rabbeinu Avigdor HaKohen is probably one of the Bali Tosvos. Sorry, I just gave you the wrong sheet. Just hold on a second. This is, take this one. 41B we want right now. Who is Rabbeinu Avigdor HaKohen? Who says this shot about the straw being burnt? He was. It's on the bottom left of this sheet. This is his bio from Wikipedia. I made the comment last time that whenever you're not sure who a Rishon is, you just say he's one of the Bali Tosvos. So he actually is one of the Bali Tosvos. He's at the end of the 12th century, beginning of the 13th. He was in Austria. So he wrote this sefer. You can see at the bottom it says Chibur of Dine Isser Veheter, the Rabbeinu Avigdor Kohen Tzedek. So that is this I believe we saw the quote from that last time. That's right. It was in the sefer. It was in the sefer on page page 310. Yeah. Okay. So then now back to this question of 160 degrees Fahrenheit. Where does that come from? So if you look on this sheet I just gave you, this 41B sheet, this is from Rav David Cohen Sefer Kashrus Halacha Series Kashering, chapter 17. It's on the page 2 of this sheet. There's two types of Libun Kal. So we saw that the Ramah, he says that you can use this more lenient type of Libun, this Libun Kal, in certain circumstances. He refers to it here as Hagos Maimonis. He also quotes it. So he holds that it's actually Libun. That's something we also referenced last time. Ramah refers to this lenient form of Libun as Libun Kal, in contrast to full Libun, Libun Gamor. So we will see the term Libun Kal is also used to describe a similar method of kashering that replaces Hagala. While both are referred to by the same name, Libun Kal, and the required temperature is even described using the same words, Kash Nisraf, which means the straw is burnt, in truth, these two forms of kashering are not identical. So meaning, there's Libun Gamor, there's Libun Kal, and there's Libun Kal. There's two totally separate types of Libun Kal. And we actually saw the sources for these. One source is Rabbeinu Avigdor, who said that when you touch the hot metal, the straw is burnt. It makes sparks when you touch the straw. That is the stricter form of libun kal. The more lenient form of libun kal is what we saw in the Mordechai. If you look on top of page 311, or actually the bottom of 310, it says, Enot Tsarich, he's talking about a case of kashering, let's say something that's dairy, kosher dairy, you want to make it parev or fleishiks. He said, Enot Tsarich, Libun Gadol, then Ashir is Klipa. You don't need to have the outer layer of the metal come off. Rak Achita Yad Soletisbo. It just has to be that your hand retracts from the heat when you touch the metal. Mishnei Vrem, but meaning through and through. Meaning if you apply metal to whatever utensil it is, on the inside, let's say, the inside of a pot, the outside has to be hot enough that when you touch it, it's too hot to touch. So, and then he says at the bottom, at the top of 311, the Gam Regilin Livdok Al Yedei Nesinas Kash Aleh. And we're also, the way that we check that is by putting straw on. So, Mibachutz, on the outside, to see if it burns. So here, you put a thing on to see if it burns, or straw on, but that's not because it has to be that hot. That's just because you want to see if, you don't want to put your hand on it and burn your hand. It's just a method of testing. But really, it doesn't have to be as hot for this more lenient method of Libun Kal. So that's what it says here in the second paragraph of this part from Rav David Cohen Sefer. So that's Libun being in place of Agala. We said even though you use a utensil, let's say a spit for fleishiks, if you want to kosher it and use it with milchiks, theoretically, right, if we didn't have a minhag saying you don't do that, you would just be able to dip it in boiling water, even though you didn't use it in boil, you used it on the fire. But since it's hetera bala, right, it's not iser, it's kosher fleishiks, you're allowed to dip it in water. So if you want to use a more lenient form of libun kal, which is just making one the other side of it yad soletis bo, that's sufficient in that case. So that's where the OU got this 160 degrees Fahrenheit on the back side. If you go think back to our first shiur, there were lenient views, or there were strict and lenient views of what yad soletis bo is. So in this case, they're reversed of what they were when we were talking about originally. But the lowest opinions of what yad soletis bo is like 105. The highest ones were about 165. So here we go with the highest temperature to say yad soletis bo, and that's why there's this more lenient temperature of libun kal, because it's really on yad soletis bo, and we only use that really when the only thing you need to do is hagala. But this is more. It's more convenient to use libun kal than hagala. Let's say you're something big, it's hard to dip in water, so you can just heat it up to
in your oven.
And 160. Well, there's a few ways to do it. This is talking about with a direct flame, which is another issue which we're not going to go into right now, but we're kind of just talking about the general concept now without like addressing that specific issue where you do it. But this is certainly talking about, like, let's say you have a metal table like this, and you apply a blowtorch to the top, which is, we do that all the time when we're kashering tables, so the bottom has to get to 160 degrees Fahrenheit to kasher it. That's the rule for that. Okay, so that's, and then the Prima Gadim I just brought on the left here, the Prima Gadim actually outlines these three different types of libun. He says you can, remove the outer shell, that's like the 900 degrees Fahrenheit, and then he has the one with burning the straw, and then the third one is yad soletis bo. His halach lamais is a little bit different than what we paskin today, but that's just interesting. Okay, the other thing I wanted to show you is the front of this page. We have these different opinions of, the Bavli says the peel has to come off. You heat it up till the outer layer of the metal comes off. The Yerushalmi says sparks fly. Are they the same thing or not? So that's one thing. The second thing is, neither of those things happen when you heat up metal, even to a very high temperature today. Sparks don't fly, no layer comes off. It does get red hot. So is that the same thing? So if you look at the top of this page 41B, on the first side, the Eshkol writes, the Hashiurim Shel HaBavli V'Yerushalmi HaVichad Shiura. It's all, they're the same thing. It's the peel coming off or sparks flying. It's the same, right? I think you were asking this last time, Alex. And he also quotes the Prima Gadim. Melabno ad sheyaser klipaso ad nitzotzot nitzin hemenu. Either the peel comes off or the sparks. Vida vida echadu. Both of those are the same thing. Now the red. Oh, what about getting red? So if you look here, there's a tshuva from the Hagos Maimonides. This is super interesting. You see that little, I made the box around the word aval there. Aval maras Miriam eishes dodi Rabbeinu Tam. So apparently the Hagos Maimonides, he was also a Baal Tosfos. His name was Rabbeinu Meir. His biography is right underneath this. Rabbi Meir Bar Yekusiel HaKohen Meir Ruttenberg. He lived from 1260 to 1298. He only lived to be 38 years old. Why? Because he was sadly murdered in the Rindfleisch massacres in Germany, which happened in 1298. That's how we know when he died. In later terminology, we called the pogrom. They killed 20,000 Jews. Unbelievable. So anyway, listen to this guy's zichus. This Rishon zichus. If you see his family relations by reading this, Aval Maras Miriam. So this woman named Miriam, Ashes Dodi, the wife of my uncle Rabbeinu Tam. So he was a nephew apparently of Rabbeinu Tam. This Rabbeinu Meir. Machmira, she was strict. So he's talking about, we're not going into what he was talking about. He was talking about a case where you didn't really need to do Libun. So what did she do, even though you didn't really need to do Libun? He machmira the labna ad shetadim. She would make it, get it hot until it got red. Ukesha'en yechola lahadim, and if she wasn't able to get it to be, the metal to be red hot, ki Hashalheves any yachola lahadim. Come on, Gachom. Let's say it was coals. She didn't have a flame capable of making the metal get so hot. Haisim mechavenes kashir hadamas gachalim. So she would leave it in there. It sounds like the amount of time that it would take it to get hot. I'm not exactly sure. You know what are you saying in this part? But the point is, she had this technique. It sounds like what she's doing is libun gamor. It doesn't say anything about sparks flying. It doesn't say anything about the metal peeling, the surface peeling off. It's getting red, which fits with the metzias. It fits with what we see in our time when you heat up metal. Lonodali imalpidodi asosa. I don't know if she was doing this in the instructions of my uncle or Rabbeinu Tam, or alpi baila rishon, or if it was her first husband. I guess Rabbeinu Tam was her second husband, Harav Rabbeinu Avram. Maybe he's the one who told her to do this. Shahaya Raga B'chumras. He used to do all kinds of chumras. So maybe her libun in this case, meaning, again, he's talking about a case where she didn't really need to do libun, according to what he was saying. So if it was Rabbeinu Tam saying this, then Rabbeinu Tam was not Raga B'chumras. He would say, oh, well, if she was doing this, I would have, Rabbeinu Tam said so, then this is the basic halacha, and I stand corrected. But if it was just her first husband, Rabbeinu Avram, who was a big machmir, then it doesn't prove anything. Inami l'chadchila, or no, meaning maybe she knew it wasn't necessary, but it was just, oh, if you can kasher it in an extra way, you might as well, but she didn't really need to. Okay, so that was just an interesting thing. That is where that fits with our metzias of the getting red. That's the source of that. You can read this on your own. Rav Heinemann on the first page explains why the word libum means white. He says eventually you heat up metal hot enough, it gets white, but it starts with getting red. You can read this part. I have some scientific information here about what temperature makes metal get red. So that kind of fits with some of the opinions of that we saw of what the required temperature for libum is. Okay, that is all catching up from last time. Now, what I want to talk about this time is how Libun works. And this is a very fascinating topic, and one that is, I think, a little bit has not sufficiently been thoroughly covered in many Sfarim that I've seen. So I think I already gave you the one that says Shir 42 on it. I'm trying to confuse you with a lot of papers. So how does it work? So first of all, we saw a rule on page 307. This is like one of the basics of kashering. It's actually page 305. Amar Rav Huna, Brei de Rav Yehoshua, Eitz Paror Magilo Baroschen. A wooden ladle should be purged in boiling water. Uvechli Rishon, and a Kli Rishon, meaning it should be in a pot on the fire. Kasavar Kibolo Kach Polto. Paskins, and according with the principle, in the way that it absorbed it, meaning the taste of the forbidden substance, so it emits it. Meaning, however, how do you kosher something? The same way that it absorbed the forbidden thing. If you stirred a pot of clam chowder with this ladle, the way you kosher it is by stirring it by dipping it into boiling water. And that purges it. Meaning you don't have to kosher this on the flame because you didn't roast it. You cooked it in a pot with treif. You didn't roast it with treif. You cooked it in a pot with treif. Therefore, you can kosher it in water in a pot, in liquid. And that's what we also saw on page 306. The Brisa went into all these details, right? If it's a spit, then you have to do it in fire. If it's pots, you can use water. Okay, kibolo kach polto. So the question is how that applies to libun. So when you kosher that ladle in boiling hot water, the mechanism of how koshering works, everyone agrees that it's purging, right? That's how we translate the word hagala. Whatever is absorbed in the utensil, when you put it in the boiling water, it expels it. It purges it. It doesn't destroy the forbidden flavor. It doesn't ruin the forbidden flavor. It extracts it. So we're going to see later, when we talk about Hagala, we'll see soon, that presents a problem for Hagala, because if it extracts the tray flavor, then it's coming back into the water. Maybe it goes back into the kli that you're koshering, so it didn't accomplish anything. So we'll address how we solve that problem. But Hagala for sure works by extracting the tray flavor. Now the question is, how does libun work? So if you take a look at the top left, which I believe is the Ra'ah. I can't remember right now. It's a Rishon, the Ra'ah. So he says, Bechli Matechos. Okay, we're coming in the middle of a sentence. Dehasam Lahaflit Mashabala. So there, and he's obviously talking about Hagala, dipping something in boiling water, there you're expelling what it absorbed. V'alibun b'shum makom eino maflit kol isur shebo. When you do libun, when you put something directly in the fire, that never expels what any prohibited thing that's in the metal or in the kli. Ela kiloi hu, it's destruction. Shehu mechala isur shebesocha. It obliterates the prohibited, burns it up. It burns up the prohibited flavor that is in the utensil. So according to the Ra'ah, Libun works totally differently than Hagala. It doesn't purge, it destroys. It's Soreif, burning is the best, like the easiest term to use. He uses Kiloi. Okay. But there are other Rishonim, however, which is very interesting. If you take a look, just hold on to take a look in the English paragraph on the left. We mentioned that sometimes koshering is affected. This is the Sefer Gray Matter by Reb Chaim Jechter. We mentioned that sometimes kashering is affected by placing a vessel in boiling water, hagala, although the times a utensil must be placed directly in a fire, libo, and the two processes function differently. Kashering with boiling water extracts its mafleet absorbed taste, whereas kashering with fire chars the absorbed taste until it is utterly destroyed, removing its halachic status as food. Right, so he just accepts this difference between the two. If you look at the second page, this is again from Rav David Cohen. It's the paragraph called Fixed Temperature on the left. The poskim explain that libun is fundamentally different than hagala, in that hagala draws the non-kosher tam out of the utensil, the flavor, while libun incinerates it in place. We will see that when tam is being drawn out, the concept of kibolo kachpolto dictates that whatever temperature tam was when it went in is the temperature of hagala water required to get it out. Meaning, let's say you have, and we have this in factories that we work with, you can't run boiling water through the pasteurizing machine, that it just doesn't get to that temperature, or sometimes it ruins gaskets and stuff. So that's 212, right? But you can get it to 190. So what he's saying here is that in terms of using water to kosher something, if you never run that machine more than higher than 190, then you can kosher it at 190. However, Rev Schwartz and Rev Schachter assumed that that does not apply to libun. Since libun gamor incinerates the blios, there is a fixed level of heat required to accomplish that goal, regardless of how hot the non-kosher food was. So let's say, and we're gonna see a little bit more of this, let's say your oven is not a self-cleaning oven. If you have a self-cleaning oven, we assume that's libun gamor. We talked about that last time. It gets, if it doesn't, not 900 degrees, it's very close. But let's say you have a regular oven. And by the way, in most hotels and caterers that we kosher to do kosher events, they're not self-cleaning ovens, they're regular ovens. So how do you kosher that? Now you say very simple. You put the temperature on 900 degrees. They don't go up to 900 degrees, right? They go up to 550 is usually the highest they go up to. A home oven maybe goes to a little less. So how do you kosher that? So so if you say kibolo kachpolto, that however, whatever heat the temperature, the iser was absorbed into it, you could use that same temperature to expel it, like we say in that factory example, right, the 190 degrees, then you can, look, you never use the oven at more than 550 degrees because that's all it goes to, right? You're never going to cook something in there for higher than that. So then you could kosher it at that temperature. But if we say that, no, since it doesn't purge, the libun doesn't purge the flavor from the kli, it destroys it. So maybe that the only temperature that can destroy it is at 900 degrees. There's no, you can't just say, oh, the iser went in at this temperature, therefore you could do it at a lower temperature. So this is exactly what Rav Moshe Feinstein argues. Take a look at page 1 at the bottom right. So in the first box, like three lines up, we're just going to see little snippets. The hagam libun mashma she'eno poli elasorev. Libun doesn't expel; it implies that it burns, it incinerates the iser. Okay, we're not going to go into the details of that. There, now go to that second box for Moshe. So therefore, we understand, since it incinerates, we understand why a kli that you used directly with the fire, like you roasted with it, meaning, at 900 degrees, sparks fly, right? He's using the language of the Yerushalmi, right? So, let's say I cook my kebabs, let's say it's treif kebabs, pork kebabs on a regular grill fire, it's not, there's no sparks flying, it wasn't 900 degrees. Let's say it's 600 degrees, 500 degrees, whatever it is. He says, Rav Moshe, we don't find that, oh, since you didn't use it at 900 degrees, you can kosher it at 600. He says, no. There's one temperature that you kosher, sparks flying, right? We call that 900 degrees. Why is that? He says, because it incinerates it, and it doesn't incinerate it unless you get it up to the right temperature. You only say the rule of the same temperature that it absorbed, that's where you can expel it. That only applies to the form of kosher known as Hagala. That's this Rav Moshe. Okay, so according to that, it's very difficult to kosher an oven that doesn't self-clean because you have to get it to 900 degrees. So there are two ways to do that. Either you get a blowtorch, which is something we use routinely in a hotel to kosher certain things. We don't use it for the oven. We don't poskin this way. We'll get to that in a second. But you could use a blowtorch, or you could kosher it at 550 degrees. It doesn't do a proper job, but you clean it and you line it with like a special paste box made for Pesach. There are some people who are strict to do this. If they don't have a self-cleaning oven, they don't want to use a blowtorch or something because it's not practical. They use some type of contraption that makes their oven usable for Pesach. Now, what's the other opinion? The other opinion says that you can kosher an oven at the highest temperature that it's used at. So what's the basis for that? So first of all, you can see in the article on the left that this is from the Sefer Gray Matter. This is from Rev Salvechik held this way. Rev Aaron Cutler famously held this way. You kosher it by setting it to its maximum temperature for an hour or two. So they say that this is, you say kibolo kach polta, the same temperature that it absorbed, it can expel, even for libun. So since an oven never absorbs flavor at a higher temperature than its maximum setting, you can kosher it at that temperature. And then he notes over here that Rav Moshe disagrees with that. So what is this based on? So Reb Jachter in the Sefer, he doesn't take this step that we're about to take to explain why Rav Aaron Cutler and Rav Salvechik held this, of why you are allowed to use libun at, let's say, the top temperature of your oven. The reason is because, and this is explained by Rav Baruch Gigi, you can look on page 2, there's like a small box over on the right, kosher electrical appliances, because other Rishonim disagree about the incineration of libun, meaning the 900 degrees of libun, they say doesn't incinerate the iser, it just extracts it, just like hagala. It's a different method, right? Instead of using boiling water to extract, this uses a direct flame, but it also extracts the prohibited stuff. It doesn't destroy it, it purges it from the, let's say, the spit or the grill. So if you look on the top right of the page, this is the iser v'heter. Look in the middle of the paragraph. Actually, at the end, it says four lines up from the on the top right on page 1. V'kach kosav b'smak shel inyan libun ein chiluk bein ben yomo l'she'enu ben yomo. Doesn't matter if it's been used in 24 hours or not, and we'll get back to this when we learn about Algola. El yachol l'labno ba'oso hayom shenesar. You're allowed to do libun the same day that it used it with treif. Daha poli kol davar v'nofil arts. It expels everything. When you do libun, it expels. He doesn't use the word, it destroys. It burns. He says it expels everything. The same thing, this Rashi in the middle of the top of the page, Shinishtamshu bo b'nei midyan alidei ha'or, taviro ba'esh, so they used a grill, you put it in a grill, ke'ein bolo le'iser yafli tenu. The same way, it absorbed it, it spits it out. So Rashi here is talking about libun, and he uses the phrase of spitting it out, or of expelling it. Okay, so now what we're seeing here is that it's a machlokas rishonim. How does libun gomor work? And the ramification is for a conventional, a non-self-cleaning oven, right? If you say, Ramosha said, you can't, assuming, and we'll talk about this briefly, assuming an oven needs Liban Gamor, Ramosha says you can't do Liban Gamor because you can't get it up to 900 degrees unless you use a blowtorch. But the other shitas are Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Aaron Cutler. They say that no, since it never was, you never, you're kashering for Pesach. You never used it with chametz more than 550. You can kasher it at 552. Why? According to the way we're explaining, because Libun also works by purging. And when you're talking about purging, it just has to be the same temperature that it absorbed. It doesn't have to reach the magic 900 degrees.
So would this also apply to like barbecue grills, like a toaster, like, you know, which has a one setting or maybe a maximum setting, or even like a little mini oven? Like those things.
We have to talk about it a little more, because that's more of like, that's a slightly different issue because the food touches it directly.
Okay.
So there is a question here, which I said I was going to address quickly, which I'll do right now, is does an oven need Libun? Meaning, Reb Moshe was assuming that an oven needed Libun Gamor, which is a very, it's a surprising position to take. There's a couple different explanations. You can look at the top of page 2 to explain why Reb Moshe held that way. Either it's because the primary use is without any liquid, or there's another reasons in the footnote here, which I printed, it's more further down on the right side, because of the surface of the ovens in Reb Moshe's day were porcelain, and they couldn't be kashered with Haggalah. Anyway, the point is that the pashas is an oven only needs Libun Kal, because the food doesn't actually touch it. It touches the pan. But the only way an oven can get treif is if a piece of food falls on it, right? Like, let's say on a rack. So that's more of a question. But like the roof of the oven, where it's like a Zaya issue, right, the steam, that even if it makes, let's say you're cooking some treif, you know, you're cooking pork in your oven and there's steam, then you kasher that, you can kasher that with, that's Libun Kal is enough, because you only need Haggalah to kasher. That doesn't need Libun Gamor.
Food can fall in the oven all the time. Food can fall in the oven all the time.
Yeah, but if it falls on the rack, so again, the rack, it is an issue.
But I'm saying if it falls to the base.
It falls to the base.
Like I'm saying, like you're cooking like this like soupy like substance or whatever.
Yeah, that could happen.
That's happened in my oven.
Right, but that's, like, okay, that's, yeah, but that's also, it's unusual. And we'll try to address that when we get to a later thing. Bottom line is that halacha lemaisa, everyone assumes that, and I just brought a couple examples. Rabbi Yaakov also agrees you can use Liban Kal. I brought that on the bottom right of page 2, and I brought the art scroll sefer here. It is commonly on the bottom left. It is commonly accepted or enforced that a gas or electric oven may be kasher to Liban Kal. However, those who question this practice and require Liban Gamor, again, that's like Reb Moshe's opinion, since it's difficult and dangerous to use a blowtorch and also the oven, the stricter opinions require that you, in addition to koshering it, Liban Kal, you place a metal insert, right, that's what I was mentioning, or you, if you don't have self-clean. Okay, but the bottom line, that the main point of this whole shiur, and which what's fascinating about it is how, what is Libun, right? How does it work? Does it incinerate, or does it just purge? And there are ramifications. There are many more ramifications which we'll get to. But this is, I think that there, again, you'll see this, it's, this issue is acknowledged by Rav Jachter in Gray Matter, and he applies it to ovens. It's acknowledged by Rav David Cohen, but he really dismisses the side saying the approach saying that it expels. He just assumes it incinerates, and we'll see a little bit more why. But it seems based on our halacha lemaisa, that we say that it doesn't, it expels, it doesn't incinerate. So again, we'll see more ramifications. Unless you say, of course, that the oven nearly doesn't need Libun Gamor in the first place, then the fact that we allow Libun Kal at 550 degrees or 500 degrees is not necessarily evidence of of the nature of Lieblin, but that's, we can talk about that more another time. Thanks for joining me, everybody. We'll continue probably next time with Hagawa. Yeah.